Bill Stevens, one of the leading UFO investigators in the world, and with us in the studio, George Green, who is deeply involved in this kind of investigation and getting the information out simply for your perusal. You can look at it and take it or leave it, which is much as what we do on this show, George. And we are open to questions about the extraterrestrial, the contact cases that are going on, and whatever may be on your mind. Neil, welcome aboard.
My question is on the spaceships themselves and the extraterrestrials.
Mm-hmm.
How can they conquer the great distances of space and achieve the speeds that they do without going into light speed or whatever and disintegrating?
Well, you mustn't put things on the level that we understand it here. I think their physics are far beyond. But Wendell, I know, has some good answers for you on that one.
Wendell? Well, yes. In close to 100 cases I've examined, I don't know of any of them that come here in a linear sense, in the sense that we think of traveling from point to point at the speed of light. None of them would have made it. All of them seem to have some shortcut in traveling space, using some kind of different space-time relationship or space-time condition, and also possibly some different kind of time. They all make it in a matter of hours or weeks at the most.
We have talked, Neil, I don't know how much you've listened to the show, but we've had Colonel Bearden on from time to time, who is really an advanced theoretical physicist, talking about the ability that we're now being able to perceive in our physics of what he refers to as bending space-time. And perhaps this is what's happening there.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Good to have you aboard. And Al, what's on?
Hi.
Yes.
This is for any of you. I have heard various things about the Billy Meyer case. Not all of them positive, and I've heard this from other UFO investigators, and I'm just wondering, like, I've heard things about them finding UFO models in his trash and things like that. Can you comment on that at all? Any of you?
Yes, I'd be glad to, sir. There were models photographed, as in almost every case where photographs are taken. Early on, the photographer tries to model the spacecraft. He first draws it, then if he tries to model it. In the case in Switzerland, that was impossible because the man was not a model builder. He only had one arm.
Uh-huh.
So the models were usually made by other people. Most frequently, the sons of other people that were visiting there that made them, either turned them out of lathe, made them out of paper, or one thing and another. And all of those were photographed, too.
Mm.
But those were never offered to anybody as photographs of the spacecraft. That's a popular ploy used by the detractors to try to show that all the photographs taken were made of models, which is not true.
I think in one case, Wendell, didn't the Pleiadians give him a model of one of their craft?
Yes, that's right. In one case, the Pleiadians brought him a model of theirs and let him photograph it.
Huh.
And it was very interesting, Al, whenever they analyzed the pictures of the models that they found also
like
in the trash, they found out that they were pictures of models. You know, that's sort of the genius for the obvious, I thought.
Hmm. Okay, and I have one other question. These hybrids, so-called, is there any, have they done much research with these persons to see if, like, they're more intelligent or, you know, DNA differences and things like that?
Well, they seem to be advanced in a number of ways, both spiritually, physiologically, and they certainly had knowledge far beyond anything we could imagine.
You mean the hybrids?
I was referring to the
hybrids. Apparently, it is only, what, 5 years old or something like that?
Yeah, Wendell, he's talking about the children. Have we seen any great...
The hybrid child down there?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. There's been no measure of the intelligence balances of the child. We have not been able to examine her. She was only brought to visit the father in a contactee situation twice. He's been taken elsewhere to another planetary base to visit with her three other times. He's been taken away four other times to the other operating base when she wasn't there.
Oh.
But it would be, it's a good question, Al. It would be interesting to see if this intermingling of these two different species will work, and if it does bring on some advancement of the species.
It'd be interesting anyway. Okay, well, thank you.
All right, Al. Yep. Thank you very much for that. You're on, Ken.
Okay. Hi.
Yes.
Oh, Happy New Year. Yeah. Happy New Chinese New Year.
Okay. collect your... Getting geared. You're on the air.
Yeah, I was just putting my cassette tape in.
Okay.
Then I got to turn my radio off. Okay. Okay, yeah, I wanted to talk to Mr. Green and you, Bill,
okay,
about an experience I had a couple weeks ago, being that I am a contactee and I'm in touch with these beings from the etheric planes of Venus. And what happened, we were up in the mountains, and through my father, we talked to one of these beings, and I asked them if it was possible that, I hadn't talked to them for a few years, and I asked if it was possible that they still manifest in the material plane, the their space brothers that work with them. And they said only if they feel a real need to. What was interesting, though, is that they mentioned that they are working and observing the innermost levels of our military and government, and they kind of play games with them. Before I get into in a second here about these kind of games, I wanted to mention that I found it real interesting that you were talking about how one can become a contactee earlier, and that is through opening yourself to that vibration, more or less, correct?
True.
Okay, and I would like to suggest the best method I know of for that is by developing a practice of meditation. Whatever kind of meditation one wants to get into, just practice meditation, and this kind of thing will happen. It will unfold at its own progress within every individual being, if it's supposed to.
If it's supposed to, that's the thing.
Yeah. Okay. And this has happened with me in my lifetime. My parents were both mediums, channels for these higher beings. And so they told us that, yes, they do sometimes materialize into the physical plane because these beings that we communicate with dwell more in the etheric plane around Venus. But the beings that they call scientists are who we see in the physical plane here around Earth, and they say if they need to, they'll manifest. Well, on the way down from the mountains that evening, a few Sundays ago, January 19th, they did indeed materialize, and there was about eight of them, and they were coming through me and my friend. We were acting as channels, in a sense, and as their energy came through us and our voices, as our voices would increase in intensity, the lights, their lights of the spacecraft would grow brighter at the same time in complete synchronicity. And what was incredible was that five of these lights were in a pattern over March Air Force Base. And I wanted to hear what maybe Mr. Green could comment on this.
All right, but George, you have any comments about the etheric level of Venus?
I've been investigating a couple of cases of on this case. In fact, Wendell sent me on one case to talk to the people. It's a little hard to get subjective evidence on etheric fields at this point. I have just talked to a couple people that supposedly from Venus and appears that have some kind of imagination at that point. I'm not saying that it could or could not happen. The Pleiadians say Venus is not an original planet from here, from our system. But it's beyond us in this dimension that we're playing with in order to have some real critical facts. I think Wendell could back that up.
Now, Wendell, I know that you have looked into that level of contactee. What have you found out?
Well, I find what the man is describing there, what your friend is very much what Sheila describes also, the one who claims she was brought here from Venus when she was a child.
Yes.
And the life wave in a higher vibrational realm of being, but not so far that they can't densify it into ours, is also described. And much of what else he says also she corroborates, or he corroborates her in one sense or another. See, I've got a good one for you here, though. Another case in Brazil, another one of the abduction cases. Well, you got George on there.
Right.
There was a man that was picked up and taken to another planet again. This is from Botucatu. And that man was a hospital orderly in a city clinic there. And they had a terminal case that he was working on. And on an impulse, when he was aboard the spacecraft one time, he asked if they could help him with the case. And they picked it up from his mind immediately what he was, the case that he had in mind, and they gave him two samples of material, one to be rubbed on the soles of the feet of the man, and I don't remember what the other one was for. But we got specimens of each of those two samples and brought them up here to the United States, and George had them analyzed and found that the materials were quite unique. So you might ask George to fill you in a little bit on that.
He already did.
That was an interesting case. And by the way, the man who was investigating that was sideswiped by a car. His car was knocked off the road and killed. And all the photographs of the markings on the man's body and a number of other things that we definitely wanted disappeared when the wreck was recovered.
I went into that before you come on the air, Wendell.
Yeah, we had gone through that, and it's a fascinating story. And the compound had some things in it that they just couldn't trace down at the laboratory up there in Denver.
Yes.
All right, Ken.
Can I say one more thing?
You sure can.
Okay. This experience I was describing took place over a half an hour period of time. And therefore, it wasn't just a momentary experience. So some way they must have been able to keep the Air Force interceptor jets on the ground, because it lasted quite a while, this communication, and which turned out to be a healing experience for myself also.
What kind of healing? A physical healing?
Physical healing, yes. I was healed tremendously from it. And so I was going to say that I derived from the experience that we really don't have too much to worry about any nuclear weapons, because if they can show that they're in control of the military, they're showing that the Creator, Godhead, Spirit, whatever you name it, is in control. We don't have to worry about nuclear weapons from American government, Russian government, terrorists, anything like that.
Makes you wonder why they don't get this information on to Mr. Gorbachev and Mr. Reagan, doesn't it?
Well, I think we're in the process of doing that.
All right.
Bill, I'm going to have to leave you here. I want to tell you goodbye to you, Bill, and to George and Desiree there, and all your listening audience, and maybe we can do this again sometime.
Well, Wendell, it's a pleasure to have you here, and John and Karen Erickson are just dropped in and said to give you their love and hello.
Hey, bless your hearts, yeah. There's some very interesting things developing along that project that John was working on many years ago, and if I can find his address here, I'll write him and tell him about it.
All right. Well, write me, and I'll make sure he gets it.
All right.
And we will try to get you back on as soon as possible. And thank you very much for taking time out. I know it was difficult for you to join us.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, Wendell.
Yes, sir. See ya.
All right.
Yeah.
Wendell was the very first guest I had on the Open Mind show, so he's always occupies a very special place in my mind and thoughts, and the work that he has done in trying to get this information out. The reality of the UFO is legion, and we'll be discussing it more now with George Green in just a moment. In discussion with us is George Green, a businessman from Denver, Colorado, many interests here in the Los Angeles area, all over the world, in fact, but he has a great interest in bringing the truth of this to your attention, and has involved himself deeply in that. Has a number of books available for you, and he's certainly not in the publishing business. This is just a love of his for you to get this information, take it in, accept it or reject it, but at least get some good information rather than some goof-off stuff or some wild mystical stuff that goes on. George, it's good to have you here. We have David on the line. Hi, David.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, to follow up, it's fascinating. I have a question, Mr. Green. With regards to contact that Ken discussed a few minutes ago, who are they? Who are you referring to, Mr. Green? Who are they? How do you communicate with them? It's most fascinating.
Each different contact communicates just like you and I are talking, or telepathically. So it depends on where they're at and what level that they want to go for their communication.
What language?
The Palladians go into their schooling, per se, and they say like going to Berlitz school. They spend a month learning whatever language they want to, whether it's German, English, Spanish, Lithuanian, or whatever. Then they come down and they interact and practice just like anybody else. And they can, in speaking just like you and I do.
Now, any physical form?
The Pleiadians look exactly like we do. They have a couple minor items, but their answer to that is there's no two people exactly alike in the whole universe that we know of right now, so they could be slightly different, but they claim that we're descendants of them, that this planet, I think the word that they used was engineered, and each of the different species or different races that we have come from different planets. They claim that the Pleiadians was one race, the Reticula Starcruster had another race, and each different race originally came from some different planet, and they basically evolved. We did have evolution as such, an intermixing between the races, and they told us about what had happened at Easter Island, for instance. That was a race of people that were basically giants.
When you refer to they...
That I'm referring to the 2,000 pages of notes that we have from the Pleiadians and discussing that, since primarily I'm on that, but each different book that we're working with, and working with Wendell Stevens and his investigations, each different contact, for instance, the people from the Reticula or the people from Iarga, whichever race we're working on, gives us a different clue on all the different civilization of what's going on.
The sightings, for example, that are occurring in Tucson. What's the reason the press is not reporting it more extensively?
Well,
in your opinion,
my opinion is that it's not that newsworthy for them, and they cannot have any more valid information. In other words, great, there's a sighting. What can the Air Force do about it? What can the anybody, the military, do about it? There's a sighting. They're not capturing one. They're not doing anything at this point on them. They're there. And if they can't dissect it, then the people just generally don't put it away. Further back to this story you're talking about previously, Bill, I was at Dr. Hynek's, and we looked at a videotape from three different television stations in New York, on this case, on this flying V formation, and three independent television stations had their cameramen out taking all of these pictures, and these craft were as big as football fields, and twice as big as football fields that were going across. And now they have them, and all that they did hit the New York area for a while, but you didn't hear about it in the rest of the country, because again, you can't dissect it.
Mr. Green, for example, there was a sighting in Tucson, and you mentioned that about 1,000 people saw it. It's the most fascinating thing. Wouldn't it be an item that any newspaper would like to print and tell the people about? It was a sighting in Tucson.
You would think so.
Yes,
David.
Exactly.
But, what George is trying to point out to the safe, you're an editor on the desk of the Los Angeles Times or at Channel 7.
Mm-hmm.
The story is that there was a sighting.
That's it.
And thousands of people saw this formation of disc-shaped craft fly over Tucson. That is the end of the story.
Yeah, what evidence do we have? Even if you have a photograph, generally they're black and white, and it's just occasionally.
Now, at the same time, a story comes in about a five-car crash on the freeway and six people were killed.
I understand.
And so there goes this story.
There goes this story. Can you accept them, Mr. Jenkins, that the story...
Well, I don't think that that's good journalism, but... And I wouldn't do that, and I don't do that. When I sit on the desk here at KABC, I did report the Tucson story. I was probably the only one that did.
I see.
Because I think it's important. It's true. I don't know where they came from, where they were going, but I do know some things about it. Thousands of people saw it. The military saw it. And as you heard Wendell say, that the tapes from the military bases were whisked away to Washington.
Yes.
That's also a part
of it. Which brings me to my next question.
Yes.
This has been going on, this phenomenon, for about 40 years, I suppose.
Well, since the beginning of time.
Beg your pardon?
Since the beginning of Earth history.
Okay, then it's 45 years, 46 years. All right. What's the reason for our government, and I presume, Mr. Green, you say that probably the Soviets or the British or the French, the Chinese, are also withholding this information from their people? What's the reason for it? And do other governments do the same thing?
I think that they do, but not in that great a detail. The Soviets have a assigned a team in order to investigate it. The Chinese...
They would do it just because we're investigating it.
Well, except for they're making the information available. And
they are?
They are making the information.
To their people?
To their people.
Yes,
you mean you can read it in Pravda?
You can go down to the corner newsstand and get a copy of Sputnik or some of the other Russian papers, and there is generally a story in there about a sighting, and this is a government-sanctioned newspaper. It's not like the National Enquirer.
But you're telling that their press, the Soviet press, whether it's Pravda or Izvestia,
mm-hmm.
that you find those items there in the paper?
Yes, you do.
And, okay, what's the reason for the government's withholding it? Our government, for example, and the Soviets not withholding it?
We've wondered about that. We have some, as Wendell touched upon, on the ideas. One of them is that concurrent with the, say, the national acceptance, with the government imprimatur upon the national acceptance that we are being visited by people from other planets, is the fact that we also may have research going on primarily from those craft that have crashed. And if we are openly researching craft crashed UFOs, and I think this is where the problem is as far as the government is concerned, that means that we are openly researching their propulsion systems, their navigational systems, perhaps their weapon systems, and that represents a technological leg up greater than the hydrogen bomb, which of course then starts politically interrupting or changing the balance of power and doing all sorts of things. So the government would rather that nobody knows that they even acknowledge that they exist.
When you say nobody knows, you mean... the public, doesn't know. But certainly, they know about it, and if they know about it, the Soviets know about it for sure.
That would be my rationale, David, but maybe I'm not very smart.
Okay. The incident that Ken described there, what happened to him on the 19th of January,
mm-hmm.
how does one take it? How does one hear? I was listening. It was fascinating. It's hard to believe. Still, Mr. Green, would you care to comment?
We get a lot of people that give us sightings. And the Pleiadians explain that they can block out areas so that you could see the ship and nobody else could. They put it in perspective. Let's say you're sitting on the corner of a building, or you're at one in the middle of a building, and there's a policeman on the corner, and then there's somebody else on the other side. You can see the policeman, and maybe the other person can see one side of the policeman. They block out certain areas. They actually, to make it simply, we took a flashlight and you put out a beam of light. They can put out a beam that cuts out and bends the waves so there isn't anything there. So they call it cloaking, simply.
Mr. Green, and finally, could you comment on my question, the one I asked Mr. Jenkins, gave me his reply, reason for the government withholding it, and is it our government specifically withholding it?
Well, I think every government has its secret, but Larry Fawcett, who I believe has been on the air before, has been doing an admirable job of getting the documentation released from the government through the Freedom of Information Act, and has put out a book on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed. And in that book, a great deal has been spent of the information that happened last year in the American base, which is adjacent to the RAF base in England.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the government secrecy here in the United States did not apply because it was an English base, and we were able to get a lot of the information of that sighting and landing into the public's hands.
It's one of the things that Wendell and I were discussing before, is that he can get all the information he wants to outside of the country, but it seems to be a lot of the information here that we get in the United States about, you know, sightings other than a few isolated, is really been dismissed or hushed up in some ways.
Larry Fawcett's book called Clear Intent, by the way, is an excellent book.
Clear Intent?
Clear Intent is the name of it. I think you can get it at Alexander II, many of the stores around. It gets into the government cover-up and perhaps some of the reasons for it and how that's being broken down by the Freedom of Information Act, the information that is coming from government documentation, which clearly states that there are UFOs, there are contacts, there are landings, there has been interference with military activity as well as political activity in the United States and in other nations as well. And this is all from government data, government documents, from the good old USA.
Wouldn't you wonder sometime, for example, if they're flying around an Air Force base, why they don't scramble?
They have, on many occasions.
Yeah, they have several times. In fact, in New Mexico, I was down there last year on another case, and we were discussing it because we are right next to a base. It's where we do a lot of our missiles. And they have all their radar equipment set up, and they quit scrambling their bases because the saucers were going across so fast that the radar equipment just, you know, couldn't keep track of it. It just goes zip, and air went across.
What are you going to do when you scramble?
Yeah, how are you going to intercept them? The craft that we have that are available are not able to attain that speed.
Well, maybe you want to invite them to tea. Maybe you can get them down this way.
If you were one of them, would you want to have tea with someone on a military base here?
No. I'm talking about inviting to tea them.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, thank you. Maybe you can get them together with Gorbachev and Reagan. Maybe you can do something.
I think those efforts have been made, in fact.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay, well, thank you.
All right, David, thank you.
Most fascinating.
They were good ones.
Thank you.
All right, Jim, you're on.
Hello, Bill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I talked to you a while back. I wanted to speak about the propulsion systems.
Ah, everybody does.
Yeah, I didn't hear anything really specific, and I thought I should call in and ask.
Well?
I'm very concerned about the Bill Myers incident. Was the type of craft similar to the Adamski sightings, where they had the three balls on the bottom?
The new craft have a number of balls on the bottom from Pleiades.
Oh, they do. I had received a subscription, magazine subscription, to a magazine entitled Energy Unlimited, and a while back, quite a while back.
Can you speak up just a little bit, Jim?
Yes. Okay, in the book, the magazines I received, they went into a complex dissertation about a type of energy called tachyon energy, which is not the same as the tachyon particle, the so-called faster-than-light particle. It was a word coined from the word ion, similar to the ion propulsion, except that the energy was tacked in a three-phase oscillation.
Mm-hmm.
And this was to warp space-time, supposedly the purpose of this. And
you
it was also claimed
space-time,
that
you're talking about warping space-time?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Go similar to the dilation.
Be almost instantly that way.
Yes, like just actually joining the point A to point B. And
like folding a piece of paper corner to corner.
Yes, exactly.
I'm going to tell you what, our hour has come to an end, but I would like for you to stay on, if you will.
Thank you.
Because we're going to take a break for the news at 11 o'clock from ABC in New York, and then we'll get right back with Jim, who's asking a question everybody you had learned in your reading, Jim. Let's recap that again, and then perhaps we can take it further with the information that we have.
Okay, Bill, thank you. Well, I've been studying quite a number of books. Some of the most fascinating to me and the most in-depth with really good principles involved have been the books written by a man named Bruce Cathy of New Zealand, who used to be an airlines pilot.
Yes, he was. Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if perhaps George Green has read any of those books to deal with the harmonic locations or power spots around an energy field that we're all surrounded in, like a matrix.
Yes, an energy grid that exists all over the world, I think.
Right.
Candy talked about. Yeah, this is John Bedini. John,
I've read a little bit about that. Let me just tell you what comes to my mind as I was sitting here thinking. Let me tell you some of the things that I've written down here.
Okay.
Something pulled me to the radio station tonight, and it probably was to give me some sort of information into this. I'm going to give you a few keys. The shapes of crystals, it's a very important point. The sound and frequency and the correct color. Now, this is the way that I translated it, as if a light bulb turned on inside my head.
Mm-hmm. This happens to be
this is
quite
crude.
Often.
Combinations of energy waves to create 100% energy conversion. Light waves could be blue, white, frequencies low and high, varying in pitch. All right?
All right.
All a combination of what we're calling a change in space-time. Now, you know what happens if you beat two sound waves together, you get a third harmonic. You get a different frequency.
That's the... Yes, I do. That's...
All right. Possible cloaking device.
a ray that changes our light spectrum into some other spectrum. Do you follow that?
Yes.
All right.
Sort of like the Philadelphia experiment?
Not quite.
No?
These would be frequencies much higher than we're used to dealing with. As you know, we can conceal sound by adding a frequency to the sound and transmit it somewhere, and the normal receiver will not pick it up. Now, you've heard of that, right?
Yes.
All right, so now when you go to capture this, you must generate a frequency, and then all of a sudden you pull the sound out, right?
Okay.
Almost as if it was a sideband, like a voltage-controlled oscillator or something. But the things that come to me is a three-dimensional formula with a zero starting point, A, B, and C. Now, you can change those A, Bs, and Cs any way you want to, but you could be at any one of those places in time in just a twinkling of an eye if you could bend the space-time just exactly right. And it has to do with the frequency, a crystal which would, some form of shape, which would capture the energy, and then the crystal itself would emit a power field, which you have to capture at another frequency, and you have to turn that into an electromagnetic energy, which we're all familiar with. That's what lights are lights.
About it, they told him about their propulsion system, and it seems very familiar to what John is talking about here.
It's exact. He's saying exactly what they're saying. We have to collect light and change it to an electromagnetic wave and frequency. And it appears that that's exactly what happens in the propulsion of their craft by the frequencies we can record.
That's right. I just want everybody to know that this information, I never gave it a second thought. It just came to me here.
He was sitting there busily writing while we were busily talking.
But the idea here is to capture the energy which surrounds all of us. And we have to find some way to conveniently capture that by the use of some form other than fossil fuel, other than slaves pumping a water wheel. It's going to be either a mixture of crystals and certain tones and overtones and varying color and light. And once we do this, we'll have enormous energy. But I just think that we have to be on a little bit different level spiritually and everything else to capture this energy.
Mr. Padini.
Yes.
Is there a P.O. box number I can write you at?
Yeah, it's Bedini Electronics.
Yes.
P.O. Box 769, San Fernando, California, 91341.
94341.
91341.
Thank you. And I understand you work with Thomas Bearden?
Yes, I do.
You're familiar with everything in this book, The Excalibur Briefing?
And Beyond, yes.
Yeah, pretty familiar with everything. Well, I talk to Tom about twice a week.
The reason I ask is because I have a Neurophone.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if I could write to you more about that.
I think it would be best to talk to the expert, and that would be Patrick Flanagan.
It's sort of hard to get in touch with, I think.
I think you can write to him and he'll answer.
Yeah, he will. He has a Novato, California address, and he's getting where he's not as busy and running around the world as he was, where he's answering his mail much better.
Oh.
He even answers his phone every now and then now. But, you can reach Patrick, and certainly Patrick is the expert on the Neurophone.
Well, thank you very much.
He invented it. Did that help the question that you had, and did it seem to fall in line with the research that you had done on these propulsion systems, Jim?
Yes, it really does. I've always felt that the crystals you know, are an answer to a lot of our energy needs, and also to, you know, zero time transport or instantaneous transference.
Nonlinear travel.
Yes.
All right, Jim.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for a good question. Good to have you aboard. We have Jay on the line. Hi, Jay.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing fine.
Good. Listen, I haven't been listening that long. I kind of turned it on about your station about a half hour ago.
Where you been?
Well, okay. It's been a slow night on TV, so I thought I'd listen to something with some sense.
Okay, thank you.
Well, I have a question or two. Has anybody really seen the Billy Myers video cassette yet?
Yes, I have.
Okay. How much credibility do you really give it?
Well, I give it a lot of credibility. The tape was made, actually, by Yowie, who is a Japanese... he's the Japanese Steven Spielberg, I guess you would say.
Right.
He sent his film crew to Switzerland, and...